This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
New details have come out for the March for Our Lives protest. This was published by the Washington Post. A reporter for the Washington Post, and she's been doing this for several protests that have happened in Washington recently, went through the crowd and collected data from about 1,745 marchers. And by the way, considering that the crowd size as reported was anywhere between 200,000 and 700,000, that's a really good sample size, because a sample size of about 1,000 is considered pretty decent when it comes to the entire country, and that's 300 million. So close to 2,000 is really good when you're talking about a crowd of this size. So something that should be fairly conclusive based on the data that they find. And what were the findings? First of all, 70% of the marchers were women. This is not surprising because the Women's March organized it. You remember that they're the ones that funded the whole thing. They helped put it together because there was no way that this was going to get put together in 6 weeks if there was not a pre-existing organization that had done stuff like this before to go ahead and get all the permits and everything. And so the Women's March, the same ones that marched against Trump, kind of came together and funded this whole thing. And that's one thing that the media doesn't like talking about, because the Women's March just recently has been in a lot of hot water because of their ties to noted anti-Semite Louis Farrakhan. And because of that, they don't like talking about that. Another thing they don't like talking about is, or that I haven't heard reported anywhere, is that if you look at the actual records of this thing, they filed it as a 501c4. Usually, marches and protests like this are filed as 501c3s. Now, you may be asking, Caleb, what are you doing? Why are you talking about the tax status of the organization that put together this march? Well, here's why, and this is important. If you're filing as a 501c3, which political marches and so on are supposed to do, you have to reveal who your donors are. You have to report who gave to your foundation. What they tried to do is they tried to build this as basically a giant vigil for the people that were lost in Parkland, and they tried to paint it as something that was apolitical, even though it was incredibly political. Although we're going to look at that in a second, maybe not the politics that you thought it was going to be. But even though this was a completely obvious political move by and organized by an organization that clearly has political motive, they filed as a 501c4. And the IRS accepted that, and because of that, they did not have to reveal their donors. And some people have done some digging, looked at some of the donors, looking at who is actually behind this and funding it, and hopefully we do get to the bottom of that. But they did that intentionally so that they would be able to hide their donors. But going back to this Washington Post piece, they found that 70% were women. That's kind of typical for one of these protests, and especially not surprising when you consider who was organizing this whole thing. So that's no big shock. But the participants were educated, according to them. 72% have a bachelor's or higher. This also, too, kind of fits the mold. We see this pretty commonly with protests on the left. These numbers were pretty consistent with Occupy Wall Street, a bunch of college kids or people that were on their way to get a degree, a whole bunch of people going to not only Occupy Wall Street, but the Women's March. This is fairly typical. Again, people tend to be more liberal if they live in more urban areas, and typically you have a higher rate of college degrees in urban areas, and so that also plays into this. So the fact that about 70% of them had a bachelor's degree or higher is not necessarily all that surprising in this crowd. This is kind of typical of any protest that we're seeing on the left. But here is the real kicker, and this is what a lot of people are talking about that was surprising. Only about 10% were under 18. So this March for Our Lives, which implies in the very name itself, because remember, this is supposed to be about school shootings, that this was a movement largely led by and fueled by youth fueled by people that were high school students under the age of 18. Now, maybe you could give, I don't know, a little leeway, considering that if you're under 18, you're probably traveling with an adult, probably traveling with your parents, so you maybe could see numbers closer to half and half, 50-50, even if it was led by teenagers, by high school students. But 90%? 90% of the people at the March for Our Lives, not high school students, not under the age of 18. So this whole narrative that the media has been trying and trying and trying to shove down your throats that this is where the youth are, this is what they believe in, this is a grassroots-led youth march, and this is the reason that they're doing this, not an ounce of truth to it. At their giant March for Our Lives event that was supposed to be the culmination of all this, even at the big event where they were supposed to bring everybody together, it was still 90% people over the age of 18. And the average age of the protester, 49. So that not only means that a lot of the protesters were over the age of 18, but that they were significantly over the age of 18. And it also kind of flies in the face of a lot of these adults must have been the parents of kids, because not to say that somebody over the age of 49 would necessarily not have kids of high school age, but you know, that's not necessarily all that typical. Typically, people are a little bit older than that if they've got kids in college or so on and so forth. And so the idea that this is 49, that would have mean they would have had to have kids if they have high school students there when they were under the age of, or when they were over the age of 30. Still possible. Maybe there were some parents there. I'm sure that accounted for part of the crowd. But the point is that the idea that these were a bunch of young protesters motivated by what they were seeing in schools, that's simply not the case. This was a crowd that was 90% over the age of 18, and it wasn't like it was a bunch of recent high school graduates either. The average age was 49. So it wasn't even a whole bunch of college kids. And of all these people, only 27% had never protested before. And of that number, of those new protesters that had never done this before, what you're looking at is that only 12% had said that they were for gun control. That was their stated reason. So if you're looking at the new protesters, the ones that are coming out for the first time, because this, again, was a part of the narrative that the media kept spinning, that this was a large outcry for gun control by the masses, by people that had never really done this before, but had seen the horrific events that happened in Parkland, and they are horrific. I'm not trying to downplay that. But they saw these horrific events that were going on in Parkland, and because of that, these people were just so moved by it that they had to go out and march and protest these evil guns that are, you know, in their eyes, causing the shootings. But that's not true either. Only 12% of the new protesters, despite knowing the narrative, despite watching the news, despite knowing what the primary idea of the day was, only 12% said that they were actually there for gun control. And you may be asking, well, what was everybody else there for? 56% just said for peace in general. 42% said because they opposed Trump. So again, this was an entirely politically motivated event, which should come as no surprise. It wasn't just for gun control, even though that would make it political as well. But this was fueled by primarily people that don't like Trump, that don't like the way that this thing is going. And so they're just looking for something to march. They're just looking for something to get out there. And it was not primarily these high school students, as the media has tried to lead us to believe. And the idea that these were a whole bunch of people from every walk of life that saw this and were so outraged that they had to change their mind and go after guns and go after the Second Amendment, that's not true either. Because 89% of the people in the crowd said that they voted for Hillary. Now, here's the question that I have about this, because this isn't covered in the article itself. If 89% say they voted for Hillary, and only 10% of the crowd is under the age of 18, does that leave only 1% that didn't vote for Hillary? Or are they only counting the people over the age of 18 that would have had the opportunity to vote? Either way, it breaks this narrative that these people are from all walks of life, or that people that typically have conservative values, they had their minds changed by this event. But if it happens to be the case that this was a survey of the crowd as a whole and 10% weren't even allowed to vote in this last election, then what that does mean is that you only have 1% of people that were able to vote that did not vote for Hillary. Either way, like I said, it's pretty staggering numbers, because in a crowd like this that would have been fairly political, you're going to have at least some people that didn't vote, that didn't make it to the polls for whatever reason. And considering that voter turnout, really good voter turnout, is usually, you know, about 33%, looking at this and looking at how much of this crowd went for Hillary, it does show where their true motivations actually do lie. Just like we just got done talking about the Pulse nightclub shooting, turns out it wasn't anything like we thought it was, and neither was this march. Things are not always what they seem.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.